Article 1 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Hi, I'm Hijar Al-Khazai, and you are listening to the Article 1 podcast. Article 1 is a magazine dedicated to documenting and examining some of the human rights issues Canadians and people around the world face today. It's published by Mount Royal University Journalism students in Calgary. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. Mount Royal sits on Treaty 7 territory, a region with a rich culture and history and a long tradition of storytelling. At Article 1, we respect and admire those stories and are committed to collaborating with First Peoples in our work. We acknowledge the traditional keepers of these lands, the Nete Tapi, Yahe Nakoda, Sutina, and Métis peoples. In this episode of the Article 1 podcast, we're going to take a closer look at the relationship between religion and violence, the woman's choice of wearing a hijab, and all of that in relation to the death of Mahsa Amini, and the continuous conflict and human rights violations happening against the Iranian protesters inside the country. My guest speaker today is Dr. Michael Hawley, a religious studies professor at Mount Royal University, who will discuss the association of religion and violence and women's role in this issue. Welcome, Dr. Hawley. Can we please start by asking, what is the definition of violence in relation to religion?
Violence and religion are both really evasive and complicated terms. I don't think there is any consensus among scholars or among people about the definition of religion. Everyone sort of has their own definition. And the definition of religion, of course, is informed by various biases and cultural assumptions. Violence, very often, we go immediately to physical violence, physical harm. But we also have to keep in mind that violence takes a number of different forms. There's psychological violence, there's cultural violence. Colonialism is a form of violence. And we often assume that violence is inherently negative. There are forms of violence that are understood by some people to be very creative. There is symbolic violence. And certainly, religion makes use of violence in many different ways. And in some ways, religion needs violence as much as violence needs religion. So the two are actually inextricable, in my view.
From September 13, 2022, when Mahsa Amini was walking through the streets of Tehran with her family, she found herself being severely beaten and then arrested. She died 3 days later, and this was all because she was accused of improperly wearing a hijab. You are not an expert on Iran by any means. You are not a political person or a political expert. But I would like to ask you, why do you think that the Iranian government is using religion as an excuse? Do you think that this is their way of basically portraying religion in terms of a head covering, because Muslim women, and I think any woman, portrays a type of cover differently based on her own beliefs and her own faith and her own definition of a cover.
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of things in that question, and we could spend a lot of time talking about them. First of all, I don't think Iran is an exception when it comes to politics and religion and violence intersecting. Though certainly the recent events in Iran are an extreme, absolutely. What we have very often is those in political power using religion to give authority to their views and to their policy. Religion very often has that power or authority to compel people to act in a particular way, regardless of what the religion happens to say about a particular issue. And very often questions about women's bodies, trans bodies, gender questions. Very often, those questions aren't really about religious issues. or even women's issues. Really what they are about is patriarchal power and how men retain that patriarchal power. And if you look over the history of disputes about the veil, about the proper wearing of it or the non-wearing of it, looking back in history, we see violence being imposed on women's bodies, both physically unveiling women as well as insisting that women are veiled. So the violence works both ways.
Was this the first time that you, from an expert's point of view, has this happened before where women basically faced violence because of a head covering? I remember from the research that you've done and we've spoken about previously, you said that oftentimes there were times where unveiling women was a thing in both in and outside of Muslim states.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You have, for those of your listeners who might be old enough, in the 1960s, after the fall of French colonialism in Algeria, there was the so-called Battle of the Veil, where there was a physical unveiling of Muslim women. And there was a huge contested debate about the rightness or the correctness of veiling or unveiling. Many younger urban women in Algeria were forced to unveil, but many of the older generation from rural communities saw this as a Western imposition, as a form of Western feminism being imported and being imposed upon Algerian women. So you see that unveiling happening. You see the requirement to unveil in France. You see it with Bill C-21 in Quebec. So it does happen, and it's something that is an attempt to control women's bodies, and the debate never really happens amongst women who are actually impacted by these decisions. It's very often this top-down imposition.
Because of the Iranian example and the example that you've just listed here, and of course, again, this is associated with religion and violence, I think some people who aren't Muslim may assume that Islam promotes violence and it's oppressive on women, but I know you disagree with that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Islam doesn't promote violence in as much as any other religion promotes violence. Religion, Islam is a religion, but those who come to Islam or come to Christianity, if they are violent, their Islam or their Buddhism or their Christianity is absolutely going to be violent. This idea that Islam is somehow or another inherently more violent than, say, Christianity is an absolute myth. And it actually doesn't bear out with empirical evidence. If you look at references to violence in the Quran and look at references to violence in the Old Testament wins, you know, hands down with references to violence and killing and harm and war and those sorts of things. The image that we get of Islam being inherently violent is absolutely a hangover from colonialism and imperialism, and a way to, in many ways, other people of the Near East, people of Muslim countries, in order to very often justify things such as imperialism, regime change, these sorts of things that are very often part of the Western consciousness.
You say women are both the targets of violence and the objects of intervention. Can you elaborate a little bit more?
That idea I've actually borrowed from a scholar by the name of Janet Jacobson. And she says, she makes the argument that women are very often just caught in the middle. They're caught in the middle between religious violence and secular violence. And I think she has an interesting point here, because secular violence, that is violence that we very often think of as being disconnected from religion, wars, the military going in, secular violence is very often used or justified to, quote unquote, save women from religious violence. So you look at some of the justifications of the invasion of Afghanistan. Part of the logic there was to save Afghani women from an oppressive religious regime. On the other side, very often religious violence against women is used to combat secular violence, secular westernization, these sorts of things. So very often, or for example, you will have Western interests in Muslim nations in the Middle East. And questions are raised by some conservative Muslims about whether or not the government in, say, Qatar or Saudi Arabia ought to be having dealings with the United States or Europe. And the way in which that gets justified very often is government saying, yes, we have dealings with the United States. Yes, we have dealings with the West. Yes, we have dealings with secularism. But don't worry, because we're not being distracted from our religious heritage. We're going to insist that women remain veiled. We're going to, you know, enforce this ban on women driving. We are not going to recognize gender or trans people. And we've seen this in the news. So there you have sort of cases of religious violence or religious enforcement as a result of secularism or the intrusion of secularism.
Because of the violence in Iran, I think it's safe to say that, unfortunately, Islam is being determined as a violent religion, and it's determined as negative. It's a negative view towards that religion. In your opinion, how can that be avoided? How can people who are non-Muslim separate the two?
Well, I think, first of all, through education. that's the power of education. That's the power of knowledge. And I think we also need to separate religion and religious actors and the way in which religion gets used by political by politics, by government. Again, we're back to sort of this first idea that religion is very often used to justify agendas and to justify the maintenance of the status quo and to protect very often patriarchal male interests. So I think anyone wanting to know more about what's going on in places like Iran or in Muslim majority states, I think really needs to be informed, not from hearsay, not from people who are uninformed, but it's through education.
Dr. Holly, I want to thank you for your time today. Is there anything else I missed that you would like to add?
I don't think so, other than the fact that what has happened and what continues to happen in Iran is a tragedy. And it should not in any way be confused with anything to do with Islam or the fact that Islam would condone these sorts of actions.
You've been listening to the Article One podcast. Thanks for listening. Article One is a human rights magazine published by Mount Royal University Journalism and Digital Media students in Calgary. You can find us online at article-one.ca. That's the number one. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. Thanks to artist Broke for Free for our theme. The song is Daybird off their Directionless EP. My name is Hajar Al-Khazai. Thanks for listening.